Hey, AM Talk. Hello, everybody out there. How are you feeling today? I hope you're okay, as much as that is possible right now. We're all in different but equally weird situations, I assume. Our daily lives have dramatically changed over the past few weeks, and they are changing more or less every day again. I still haven't exactly figured out what this will all mean for Helium Cowboy and our artists, and also my own art, and, well, basically everything I'm doing. For example, I have not written one damn page for my book in 3 weeks now. That kinda got stuck between everything else for now. It seems like there's always so much more to do than before life came to a halt, and it is difficult to get a grip on it all. Besides the private issues as a family, like, say, keeping the cabin fever out, or have you ever tried homeschooling your kids, and so on, I'm currently putting together a new semi-virtual exhibition with Melvin. Well, in all honesty, he's doing most of the work on that one. We're also moving everything to a new database and better online portfolio so that we can get the work of the artists that trust us and need us more than ever now out into the world. I'd be lying if I would say that Helium Cowboy is safe. Like most other galleries, we are facing dark times. But this shit will be over, and we have to make sure to keep our community afloat and safe and optimistic until then. I'm also creating new work myself for upcoming exhibitions that no one really knows if and how they will be presented at all. From an artist's perspective, it doesn't really worry me a lot, because if you look around, many people are currently exploring new ways of doing shows and virtual exhibitions and workshops, etc. Some of this will remain experimental, but a lot of it will help, I'm sure. And there are a lot of new podcasts now that is also thriving and a good opportunity to stay connected. With this series of special editions of my own podcast, Helium Talk, I'm trying to find out how the art community around the world is doing. So I'm checking in with artists, gallerists, collectors, journalists, and so on to hear how they are dealing with being locked down and what their ideas are to make the best of this. This is already the sixth special I recorded, and I spoke with Evan Pricco, the editor-in-chief of Juxtapose magazine.
Helium Talk.
So where do I find you now? Where are you locked up?
I live just right outside of San Francisco in a town called Sausalito, right over the Golden Gate Bridge. We are on week 3 of shelter in place. Mm-hmm. It has, people have been following the rules, I would say. I thought that there was going to be this, you know, I was feeling very creative and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be sheltered in place. This is the time to catch up on so much stuff. And then you start realizing you kind of get yourself busy just to block out the anxiety of what's going on, right? So I feel like I've spent the last couple of weeks just kind of trying to tread water without having to look at the news so much, or without... maybe freaking out a little bit, as the world seems to be going through something. I don't know. You know, it's like, I don't want to deny what's happening, right? Because I'm a really firm believer in that you should really take notice and take time and give yourself a breath to actually take in the moment. You know, this is a historic moment. This is such a global historic moment. But also I find myself sort of trying to, ignore it a little bit too, so I don't have a breakdown or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the two sides to it, you know, because it's we're kind of forced to be creative and stay creative. I'm not just an artist, but I also run a gallery space in Hamburg. Mm-hmm. Now my son is more or less running it these days, but you know, so there's this business aspect, and you get super. I mean, the thing with me is the first thing is, I think, not just me getting creative, but what can I do now? What's the next project? How can we tackle this? Yeah. But then, of course, there's always these moments where you think, what the fuck's happening? You know, I mean, it's
not real. You know? So. Do you find at all? Because I'm finding it too. It almost got to a point, and especially like this week, I noticed like there's almost too much content right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. Well, so they're doing virtual tours and they're doing a podcast now, mm-hmm. and they're doing Instagram Live. We're doing all that too. Juxtapose. Okay. I feel, it's great. But also I'm like, wow, it's content. There's a lot of content out there right now, but people have time. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I just, I mean, with my podcast, when I started it, it came, we had a TV show at the gallery that we did, and that was always very slow. So, because, I mean, it's TV, you know, you have to set it all up, and there's people to invite, yeah. And it's like, it's a huge event, and then for a local TV station, it was just too much work. So we did it 2 or 3 times a year. So I decided to make the podcast because it's easier, it's faster, I can do it myself, because I'm a curious person. I want to talk to people, I want to talk to artists, all these people. But then over the last year, I figured that it's too much work to publish once a week, you know, so I went back to every second week and when I have the time, and I tried to switch it, one's German, one English. Okay. And now basically this year I've just said, okay, it doesn't matter what comes first. If it's a German podcast, it's German. If it's English, it's English. But with this situation now, I talked to many people anyway. So I thought, why not make these recordings and check in with other people in France, in America, you know, sort of how are they dealing with this situation?
Right.
And yes, it's great to have the podcast out, but it's also kind of therapy for me, you know, in a way, because I talk to people from the art business and the art world and hear how they're doing, you know? So it's a nice thing to just, I don't know, catch up. Because everyone is experiencing a little bit the same, but also very different from depending on the country where you're in and your personal situation.
I think that's, I mean, I like how you said that, that it's therapy for you, because I feel like that's a little bit how we're handling it and doing coverage with people around the world, just checking on their studios and their daily routines. Because mm-hmm. I think that connection is really, really important right now. And I think people don't necessarily need, it's like, you don't need the art world necessarily right now, but artists can provide a very, very nice template or blueprint of how to get through a day doing something creative and kind of getting lost in it. And I think that's the important lesson to kind of get from artists. And I've been feeling a little bit better, just checking in with people and just kind of understanding how they're getting through the 12 hours of the day where you're kind of really trying to get through 12 hours of the day. And it's not that, like, you know, when we're on deadline, and I'm sure too, like when you're hanging a show or something, you do have those days where mm-hmm. the outside world doesn't matter. Or if you're a great example is if you're at a Art Basel week or something, like the outside world does not exist. Like you just kind of mm-hmm. get these modes and you get in these schedules where the time doesn't matter. So there is something about the art world structure where it is helpful to get through these kind of long days, I think, which is why I think for Juxtapose, we've been really trying to emphasize just really nice, frank conversations with people over the last couple of weeks about what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
So is that, that's the thing. I mean, you're running a magazine, probably one of the most, probably the most important in this field, or this genre. So yeah, I mean, everyone knows it. I mean, even though it's still sometimes difficult to get in Germany or not on the train stations, but it's still, you know, now it's nobody goes to train stations. So,
I think most
people in Germany that read Juxtapose, they have a subscription or so, because it's still the easiest way to get it. But as a magazine, of course, you can reach out to so many people, and you can do so many things. So you just right now you're doing the studio. I mean, this virtual. I mean, the virtual studio visit. So you just ask the artist to send you material, or.
We've been kind of asking artists to just give us 24 hours in the day of your life right now and send us the images and give us, you know, we kind of give some, we give some interview questions or some context of kind of, you know, what it is they're doing. But yeah, we've been doing a lot of these Instagram live sessions. They're like 15 minutes long, 10 to 15 minutes, and just artists doing things, creating art based on materials that are around the house that don't require you to go to a store. Mm-hmm. And that's been really, really fun, because we never really used that. We never used Instagram Live before.
No.
And I don't know why we really, I mean, you know, we've done it a couple of times where we've walked through a gallery show or something, but we've never really used this medium in this way. And I'm actually really, I'm learning. This is the thing. I'm learning so much right now about things I didn't have time to deal with before. Or didn't have the wherewithal, or didn't have the situation where this was the only thing I could do with the magazine's content. So this has been, I mean, in some ways, this has been such a great learning experience of just how we can utilize certain platforms better moving forward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's basically just been anything from Marcel Dezama teaching us how to draw a bat, which I realized later that bats are very controversial right now. I thought he's been painting bats for 20 years. And then Ben Venom, who was just on your podcast, was teaching people kind of just some really cool, like sewing 101 stuff. Yeah. So it's just been kind of nice. I mean, it's just, you can check in with it, take a look and see what the artists are doing. And then we post the videos, on a website, the full tutorials. We're working with this new group called If You Were Here Now. They're trying to do a series of tutorials for charity. It's really nice. I love these people. And that's another thing. It's like just meeting new people and like, hey, let's do something that activates the small business component of the art world. And that's kind of what we're doing. So it's a learning process.
Yeah. But you're also doing, I mean, not with Juxtapose, you do projects at galleries, at, you know, at spaces and stuff like that. All of that is, I suppose, canceled too now.
Yeah. And,
how do you cope with that? I mean,
yeah, well, it's actually really too bad because I was supposed to be in the tail end of my Tokyo trip right now. We were supposed to have a show with Commune in Shibuya right now, a group show, basically kind of East versus West, kind of East meets West, melting pot of different styles. And I was so excited about this show. And it's been postponed to October. But that was kind of the big shock was when they canceled that show at the beginning of March. And that's, I was on my way to New York for an Armory show. And it was like, okay. So everything's, my whole life is now on hold a little bit. The Tokyo show is a really big disappointment that it's been postponed. But it'll be back. October, we're gonna do it.
We're trying to fit everything into October and November and December this year.
That's the thing too. That's such a good point. I'm glad you brought that up because I feel like also there is going to be there's two ways of looking at it, right? There's a light at the end of the tunnel. There's gonna be so much stuff going on in the fall. It's almost like, okay, well maybe we should reschedule some of the stuff that we had planned. But the big thing is when you're putting out a print magazine and nobody can go to a newsstand, that's where I think we're all a little, I would say we're just a little bit more disappointed because we feel like our spring issue that just came out as soon as the pandemic was kind of taking hold, was one of the best issues we've done, in the last couple of years. It's just such a great issue. I say that every issue, but this one in particular, I really loved, and we had planned so many things around it. We had, podcasts lined up with artists in the magazine. And so it was like really, it felt like it was all engines were, revved and everything was good to go. So I'm a little disappointed that the spring issue maybe doesn't get the shine that it should, just physically, and so then we're, in a month we finished the summer issue. So we have a little bit of time to kind of, I don't want that to be like the COVID-19 issue either. Because I feel like, we could all of a sudden, every interview is like all about COVID-19. So we're trying to all the contributors to that issue. We're trying to be a little sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. So there's just a couple things that just we have to be reevaluated, I guess. Right. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah. I mean, it's, just moving everything to a later date also means sort of things are not happening right now that are usually happening. I mean, nobody's selling really. I mean, not many people are selling art.
I spoke to
my Danish gallerist up in Aalborg, and he said business is really good right now at the moment. But every country is different because in Germany, it's on a total halt. Nobody buys art now. And it's totally understandable to me, I'm still looking, reaching out to collectors that I know will not be very heavily affected by all this and that they can kind of still keep up the support. But for example, in Denmark, the situation is so Danish people, most of them have summer houses. So where they rent out in summer and that they go to in summer, they're all in their summer houses now and they have some time.
Got it.
They know that they still have some money. So they call up the gallery and say, hey, there are still a few empty walls, So that's a different business model that the Danish galleries, not all of them, but most have. And in Germany, people are just like, right now, they enjoy what the artists are posting.
Yeah.
They think it's really nice, but they're not even buying prints.
So when in Germany, I don't know if it, I mean, it definitely here in the San Francisco area, because it's just so tech heavy, everybody just orders things online to be delivered to their doorstep. Is that the same in Germany right now?
Not everything, but a lot more, of course, now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed that it's a very dangerous thing, because it's so, like, you start forgetting how much money you're spending on things. You're like, wait, what did we just get? Like, what is this pot? We just spent $40 on puzzles? Like, what do we do? How many puzzles do we need? You know, like, it's like this panic buying that we did at the beginning, now that we're like, what are we doing? But I was like, why don't I should be like saving up some of this money and buy some art that I've been wanting over the years. Cause I buy a little bit of art here and there. I'm not a huge art collector. Just, I think in the nature of the job, I try not to get it to, you know, kind of confuse the editorial, but occasionally I'll pick off a couple of things here and there. And now I'm kind of like, I should be buying drawings. I'm looking around at some of the stuff I just got framed, but like I should be buying some art right now. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's like, you don't want to, there's this shock to the system right now. You know, it's kind of weird to spend money on things. It just seems it's all off, but I love the Danish. I mean, it's the Danes, you know, they're one of the happiest people on earth. They figured it out.
Yeah. And they surround themselves with art. It basically comes natural. It's part of it's in their DNA, you know, here in Germany, we still try to convince the majority that, I mean, not looking at art, a lot of people enjoy that, but that there's, that there's a whole industry behind it. And there's people that art is actually kind of, that's the only way they get paid, you know, if they sell a painting. So we still have some convincing to do here, but I mean, I don't want to complain. I'm doing this since 2002 and it's always been a challenge, you know, especially, you know, when the world crashed before in 2008.
Yeah.
You know, that was a tough time, but I mean, still people buy art, and it's, I'm not expecting people to go totally crazy about it. I'm not in this business to become super filthy rich, because you won't, except for very few people.
Very few. And, you know, that's incredible, man. That's incredible. I mean, I think, you know, I want to put that into context, because I think that's so important. Since 2002, that's a long time in the art world. Not that many people last that long. And, you know, and I think about Juxtapose being around since 1994. We're an independent, we're not owned by a corporation, we're independently owned. I think people don't understand how hard that is. In the face of, like you said, people who do make it very wealthy in the art world, and this, every artist and every person, every gallerist, this is ascension, that they're all going to be Larry Gagosian or something, mm-hmm. Or you're going to be Art Forum or, you know, whatever. I think it's so, I think I like to take a second and just like acknowledge the fact that you've been around since 2002, and it's a hard thing, you know, and I've been at Juxtapose since 2006, and it just dawned on me. It's been almost like, you know, it's 14 years, and you see galleries come and go, so just mm-hmm. like that. Right. Sure. And so I just think it needs to be acknowledged. 2002. It's amazing. Yeah, I'm going to cheers you with my coffee, and you can have, if you have a beer. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm already, you know, yeah. It's a good thing about these time differences, you know,
it's time. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's nothing you cannot get into art and count on making money. You can only I mean, there's a lot of other things that you have to surround yourself with to be happy. If you're just into money, then I don't know, choose a different job. But I mean, I'm surrounded by what I love most all my life. I mean, I'm an artist myself, but also have the gallery, and sometimes that's a conflict, but often for me personally, it's a huge benefit, because I'm not just focusing on myself and in my studio. I have also the advantage of being able to work with artists and have them. It's a totally different experience to get to know an artist when you're actually working with them on this level, because you know so much more, and you're much more intimate, and you have the opportunity to see development over many, many years, you know, with certain artists that I'm still working with for a long time, and that is something I mean, I don't want to give up. So and for that I'm fighting. That's what I'm fighting.
Yeah, the gallery.
I could close the gallery and just live from of my art and the stuff that I have around me, you know, my family and everything. And but it's every time it's getting me, you know, every time again. You know, I'm not doing many shows anymore. Now my oldest son is going into a little bit into the business and he's managing the gallery. And yeah, I mean, it's not that this is going to be his perfect. Maybe it is, but right now he's perfect for it. You know, and
yeah.
It's just a nice thing to see. And this is something that you can get of the arts, you know, because I mean, you just said you're traveling probably a lot extensively and meeting.
Yeah.
So many artists and up close, you know, and I think that's I'm listening to a couple of your podcasts, and then of course you have guests like JR, and you are with Juxtapose for such a long time that you know the artist before he became the famous JR, you know, so and that's history,
right? First off, I definitely think there's something I would love to say is that I think every artist should try to run a gallery for like a year or 2 years just to get that experience and understand how that part works, mm-hmm. and how, 'cause I think you will then learn what gallerists are good and what gallerists are bad moving forward, I think. Yeah. And I think that is such a really healthy thing for an artist to get that business perspective back in. I'm not saying they need to, like, you know, make a life of it. But I do think it's a really good mm-hmm. business practice. And that's another thing. You know, I didn't go to art school. I went to school for journalism and art history. But I thought I was going to be a sports writer, which is just such a weird, I mean, that's such a weird, I'm not quite sure this will come back and answer your question or provide some context to your question. Mm-hmm. But, I loved when I was a kid, you know, my dad traveled all the time. He worked for newspapers. He was always traveling, and he would always, like, when he would come back from a trip, would bring me back newspapers or magazines, from his, you know, that he had on the airplane or whatever. And like Miami Herald, New York Times, Washington Post, all these different newspapers, and Sports Illustrated, which is a great American, sports magazine. And I'd read them just all the time, just constantly read. But I would always be so attracted to the long form stories that would be about like Muhammad Ali in 1968, you know, in August of 1968. And it'd be like a 20 page article about, you know, what he was doing in that time. And I got so attracted to talking about a subject outside of the context of what they're famous for. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I didn't want to read about Muhammad Ali in the boxing ring. I wanted to read about him as a person, as what he was doing, what was eating for breakfast, and, you know, what his political, you know, passions were and all that. And that's the stuff I got really attracted to. So I always got attracted to those stories that were more about an artist or a sports figure's personal life as opposed to what they achieved in the, you know, for their fame. So I think when I got lucky enough to start at Juxtapose, through Upper Playground, the clothing company, and Matt Ravelli, who was my mentor at the time, I was really more fascinated in these stories with these artists that was about like the parts that are outside of their gallery practice a little mm-hmm. bit. And I think that actually helped me get into doing this stuff and getting a little bit more personal with some of those artists, because I wasn't trying to lie that I had gone to art school to study every single art historical practice or era, or you know I could talk about, you know, Dada, but I couldn't, you know, list every single artist that was, you know, part of the movements. Mm-hmm. I just have always been attracted to the more day in the life part of an artist's life than I have been perhaps their actual physical skills, because I feel like that is, they get to talk about that a lot. So I feel like I always like to talk more about mm-hmm. the personal stuff.
Yeah.
That was a long-winded answer of the JR part. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's, I mean, it's, I think how you do your job and has got a lot to do with the with your approach. If your approach is you want a quick result that is that wows people, you might never get to the core of the story and to what's behind it. And I always like to talk with other artists about their practice, how they go on about it, and when you have the opportunity. I mean, you probably know Boris Hoppig from Barcelona. We've been really good friends for many years, and every time I was in Barcelona, I was staying at his house, so I was becoming part of his family in a way, and he was part of my family. And so I have a completely different view on Boris and his work than probably many other people have, because they will never come so close. I mean, my oldest, he was, when Boris was staying the first time at our place, my oldest son, or our oldest son, was, how old was he? 6 years old, around about 6 years old. And he was in the morning, Boris was drawing his little dirty cartoon figures, and my son and his and a friend of his who were staying overnight, they were sitting next to him on the table and drawing also these kind of dirty characters with dicks and everything on them. And it was good fun, you know. So that is like, for Boris, it was the very first encounter with little kids, you know, how they react to his work. And I think they can relate much better to it. So for me, that was from that point on, was always an understanding that Boris thinks probably in some parts like a 6-year-old kid with the experience of a 40-year-old, you know, like this. And those things you can only experience when you give it time, and when you don't. As I said, I mean, the point is you can always look into an artist and say, how much money can I make of this person and how quickly? But that leads to doing a lot of group shows with many promising artists and dropping 95% of them afterwards. And then you'll never build relationships. And I mean, I'm a little bit older. I'm 52. I love those relationships that I've built, and so I take it all probably a little bit more serious. But I can also enjoy much more, and I do a lot less. It's also like, I mean, I'm not doing many shows. I'm not doing many shows with many artists anymore. There's not enough time, you know.
Right.
But you have also the very quick encounters. I mean, 2006, you're spanning, I mean, like, how many artists have come up and gone down and, you know, sort of stayed and not stayed. I mean,
right. Well, and also, like, just in that time, just the ascension of, you know, street art and how it's become part of the, not even the art lexicon, but like the pop culture lexicon, right? And I think that's one thing that, like, no matter if you don't like street art, if you don't care about it, it's still opened the door for so many people to learn about art. Like, you could go, you could use street art to go into, you know, you use it as a entry point to get into contemporary art in many ways. And I think we were so lucky at Juxtapose that, like, we were growing as street art was growing. And it wasn't about like, okay, we're going to become a street art magazine, but it was like the language of street art, the accessibility of it is exactly what we're trying to do with the art world, is make it a more accessible place. So we can use, you know, street art in a way to help get people now into underground comics, or we can get them into contemporary painters. We can get them into sculptors. We can get them into ceramics, and all kind of use a similar language that street art was using, which was all about accessibility, was all about public, was all about free, was all about freedom. Obviously now it's all about lots of different things. Some things I don't like. But I thought that 2006, 2007, 2008, right before the recession, was a really good thing for time for us to utilize social media, utilize what was happening on the streets, and turn that into a better way of explaining what's happening in the art world at large. It took us a while though to get that right. I feel like the last 3 or 4 years we've really got it right. But it took a while to get it all, I think, to feel like a unison conversation in unison.
But then again, I mean, yeah, and I mean, in America, pop culture has always had a very different meaning. I mean, yeah, in Germany, you still have to convince some people that everything pop, you know, sort of that advertisement, all these things, that they can actually influence art and artists. And And here we're always, you know, sort of art has always been on a very, very high horse. And
the Gerhard Richters and the Neo Rausches is very serious. I mean, stuff I love, it's serious stuff. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, also it always has to have this academic under you know, has to, you know, sort of be fed by a lot of academic thoughts. And when you work with artists, and I think a lot of these artists that are in these kind of galleries and in this, you know, so they're written about in that way, they don't see themselves like that. And I think there's a lot of liberation when you look at the pop culture aspect, and I think that's very American. I was always a little bit, this is one of the reasons why I opened the gallery and made the gallery the way I did it, is because I thought, you know, sort of, you know, America is so much better off in that respect by acknowledging sort of these artists as being artists. I mean, the whole Beautiful Losers movement and stuff, like that, that would have not happened in Germany, you know, around those days.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, again, that's the stuff that really put Juxtapose on the map, because Robert Williams, when he founded the magazine, was founding it on that idea of the people that did psychedelic posters and album covers and comic books and skateboard graphics and tattoos were actually not only people who might have gone to really, really prestigious art schools, but were people with extremely great technical skills. And he's always, you know, Robert has always told me that you got to be able to draw. You got to be able to draw. I always love that he says that. And he's a really great craftsman himself. But Juxtapose was so lucky that there were, like, as we were trying to explain an alternative art history, that there was all these cool movements that were happening, like pop surrealism and Beautiful Losers, and there's certain graffiti scenes and street art stuff started to emerge. And now it's all kind of melded together into, you know, what it is, you know, I mean, it's kind of all become, you know, a conversation that can all exist together. You know, the Instagram is kind of, you know, I think taken away a little bit of the learning curve, or like a little bit of the ability to investigate further, I think, in a way. But I mean, you can do it, but I miss being able to pick up a Clark magazine, or was it Lowdown that was in Germany?
Yeah.
So is it still around, or?
I don't know. But there were a couple of Friends and the Family Tunes was also a pretty good magazine that was co-founded by Jabo Monk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I don't know. I'm just a huge fan of historical periodicals. I love the fact that I have stacks of books here and stacks of magazines. I can just kind of pick up and see what was happening in 1994 and be, you know, and use that as a, you know, something to study. But I think there are some really, really great shows that are starting to happen around the art world that are starting to really, really explain, what's been happening the last 20 years. And so I do feel that before the pandemic, I thought the art world was doing really well in terms of, maybe realigning how art history was supposed to be looked at.
Yeah, I agree. Before all this hit, I had a pretty good feeling about where it was heading, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because right when it was happening, we were at the Armory show. And this is another thing, like what's so cool about Juxtapose is that we were able to go and do a little partnership with the Armory show, because we've gained a little bit of traction in that contemporary art world, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But you were walking around the fair and there was like artist friends that I saw that were having big paintings in these, you know, in a very exclusive, you know, one of the OG exclusive art fairs. And I had a feeling that it felt like there was a nice moment happening in the art world where it felt a little bit more approachable. I felt like there was a lot of stuff that felt like it was based on comic books, which made me really excited. But we'll see. You know, I don't know. I mean, now it's like, I don't know. This is like 3 weeks of our life. And it's like, what? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very hard to tell, and I think it's also something that no matter how hard you think about it, you will not come up with any kind of solution because nobody really has a solution. I mean, So if you speak to a lot of artists, I also speak to a lot of artists, and I see there's like different things. You know, I mean, some artists, they are just working and
absolutely
throwing out one painting after the other, and they're just like, my life hasn't changed much. I'm usually working in a kind of isolation as well, but there's still the whole insecurity around it that influences you in your studio, no matter what you do. And then there are other artists that I've spoken to, and including myself, that it took a while to actually even start to work on the first piece. You know, yeah. I just started with baby steps a few days ago.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of artists to say, I mean, not because of fatalism, you know, just saying, oh, it doesn't make any sense anymore, just because what can I do now? What should I do now? What has meaning right now? And it's not every artist is, even though it looks to many people like that every artist is on Instagram and is posting continuously. A lot of artists are not on Instagram, and maybe they are, and they're posting one painting at a time, but they're not revealing anything of their practice. What other artists do, every artist is different. I mean, some can do it, and some can make their own story tutorials and show, you know, sort of they know marketing better. There's a lot of artists who just have a hard time dealing with this, right?
Yeah, it's funny because I had just interviewed an artist who's going to be in our summer issue, Kelly Beeman. She's based in New York, and I interviewed her 2 weeks ago, and it's like, I feel like in 2 weeks, I'm like, I just listened back to it, and I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, so that was 2 weeks ago, and it feels like some of those questions are no longer relevant to the world. Even just 2 weeks ago. And I was even thinking about my own, my own Instagram account, not the Juxtapose one, my own personal one. And it took me a couple of weeks. I finally posted something, you know, recently, cause I was like, oh, I am working on some stuff. I should probably let people know, but I had no idea. I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Like, what am I going to post? What am I going to say? I don't really feel like sharing anything. At the moment, because I don't really know what I'm sharing or what I'm doing. And I do feel like that's one of the things that's been nice about interviewing all these artists this past couple of weeks on the site was that I'm learning that I do like the fact when someone says, you know, I'm not making anything right now. I don't feel it. And I love that honesty, because we're always thinking that artists are constantly working. Like, no, I'm actually shell-shocked and I have nothing to paint, or I don't feel like I can make anything that speaks to anything honest about how I'm feeling. And I think it's incredible, because like you were saying earlier, everybody in every single pocket of the world is going through a similar yet slightly different experience. And I know this is, you know, when there's been world wars, we haven't lived through them, so I don't know, but I assume it wasn't even like this. And we're so interconnected, but this feels so, it's just the pause button is so so strong right now. So I
agree. And also this one aspect that I've been thinking about in the beginning, it was like, okay, it comes from, you know, sort of was China, then it was somewhere in Europe, Italy or something like that. And you were looking closely on all the other countries, and then of course the United States and Africa, which becomes a problem, and then everybody starts closing their borders and the world gets smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, so like where I'm sitting now, I just feel like pretty much nothing can happen to me, actually. But you stop thinking about the rest of the world, and you're not really stopping to think about. But it's like, even if you go onto media, if you read about it, it's your nation first. What's happening in Germany? Do we have face masks and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And everybody's, you know, sort of going more and more back into their shells, which before, I mean, you know, sort of Europe had no borders. That's why the whole Brexit fuck up of the Brits is so weird, you know, sort of it's so out of space, you know. I mean, most of my British friends didn't understand it, but it's like, we don't have any borders. You sit in your car and you can basically drive from one end of Europe to the other without being stopped anywhere. You just have to stop for gas and food. You know, that's it. And but you can everywhere, and you pay with the same money everywhere. So now the world is getting smaller, and will that also have? I mean, will, you know? So there's a lot of initiatives in German galleries to support also German artists, not from a nationalistic point, but because they're just around and you can still reach them. My gallerist from Denmark, who usually comes to Hamburg, which is not a long drive, to pick up the work, he told me yesterday that he spoke to German border police whether he can still come into the country and bring the artwork out. And it's like such a weird thing, German border police.
Yeah.
Still, you know, I mean, and it's a weird situation. So I don't know. I mean,
you know, it's funny. Merkel was the first leader who basically said, millions of people are going to be infected and hundreds of thousands are going to die. And I remember when she said that about, you know, Germans, she was talking about Germans. I was like, oh, she doesn't mince words. So her models are probably the right models to be following. And that kind of, that's when I got kind of scared or a little bit like, where I realized that about 6 months of all my travels were going to be canceled. And that everything was going to just be definitely, postponed or canceled. So I thank her for, I thank her for being kind of the voice of reason many times, but I thank her for maybe like setting the record straight, because I mean what she said is pretty much true. That's what's happening. In California, it's weird. California was the first state to do shelter in place in the United States. Mm-hmm. San Francisco was the first city to implement it, and our governor is really great. He actually called California a nation state the other day, which was like the kind of like all Californians were like, because you know we're the fifth biggest economy in the world, so we felt kind of like, oh yeah, let's flex our might a little bit. But I actually do think what's interesting about California is that the governor of California, his wife is an artist and actress, so I feel like he will have a little bit of extra incentive to help out the arts community when this is all said and done, because he lives in a household of an artist. So I actually do feel like that will be taken care of on a state level, which is nice. I don't trust anything, obviously, on the federal level, because our president is a empty soul. So it's the best way to put it. So
he's probably one of the worst people to have in president right now. And it's, I mean, normally also, but especially now, I think.
I think it goes Trump, then Boris Johnson, one and two.
Boris Johnson didn't have enough time yet to establish himself as the bigger.
Exactly. He was going for it though.
He might actually, I have a good friend, one of my best friends. He's from England, and we know each other for, I think almost 25 years or so. For a very long time, we're exchanging a lot about the political situation in England over these past years with the whole Brexit thing, and the English have this fantastic kind of humor, but it's so bitter it's so bitter. I mean, it's just that's another completely another topic. What is the first thing you're actually really you know sort of looking forward to with Juxtapose? Where I mean, how can life go back to normal, or do you have any ideas how I mean, not when, not nobody can say that, but is, I mean, do you have any ideas how to move on after this with Juxtapose and
community? The one thing, you know, we had our 25th anniversary last year. It was 25 years. And we did kind of a special black and white showcase in Miami Art Basel. And it was really 170 black and white drawings. And that was kind of like a little bit of a chapter end, I think, to a certain extent not of an era, but just, it felt like we really encapsulated the 25th year very nicely. I really felt like, at what was happening and why I was so excited about the spring 2020 issues, I felt like we finally got all these things in line. Like, I feel like we have a very, very strong magazine. I feel like we have a very, very strong podcast. And I feel like we have a very, very strong plan to do pop-up shows. We had a gallery. For about 6 months in Jersey City, outside of New York City, that just didn't work out. Not our fault. I won't go into that. Unless I want to start a fight, and I don't want to. So just, you know, You know, landlords are very interesting people, especially when they're uber capitalist. So I thought we had a really good plan. We were going to be doing pop-up shows around the world with galleries that we love that were kind of more so needed the support, and do our podcast and do our magazine. And we were in such a good mode. And then this happened. So I think I'm still, my plan is that we want to focus on the three or four things that we're really, really good at and that we really, really feel passionate about, and just focus on doing that and doing that really, really well. So we're doing, the plan is to keep doing the pop-up shows and do just be really, really good about that. And we're trying to work a little bit harder of working with museums specifically. Mm-hmm. Because we feel like museums are very misunderstood, and we feel like the infrastructure of museums is very misunderstood. And we know that not every person who goes to art school can be an artist, but some people want to be curators. Some people want to be, work in, conserving art. Some people want to do in marketing. So we're trying to really, we were attempting right before this happened to start telling stories about, how to be in the art world without being an artist. And that was like a big passion project of mine, because I never thought I had access to the art world growing up. And I want to make sure that everybody feels like they can. So that's the goal. So when this goes back to, I think we'll be able to, we're a small team, so we don't have to necessarily rewrite the journal. Mm-hmm. But this is, our summer issue might get delayed because there's no newsstands. There's certain things like that are logistically a nightmare that suck, but we're just going to keep plodding through because, we do have the advantage of being an independent company and not owned by a corporation. So we can be a little bit more, nimble, I guess. I'm really looking forward to doing these pop-up shows. I really liked it. And the idea of doing one in Tokyo, we had a plan of maybe doing one in London, during Freeze. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I like that idea of doing that kind of thing with Juxtapose, because it feels more in line with our quarterly schedule. And I think it's just nice to have new, about 100 artists that were known as Juxtapose artists. Now we've got so many, we've got people in different parts of the world doing content for us. We have just our base of artists that we cover so much larger. And it feels so fresh and it feels so invigorating. And I feel so much energy 14 years into this job, because there's so many new good people that I think we're trying to make sure that they feel like they're part of the art history, story that we're telling. So that's kind of been exciting this last couple of years.
But how do you find the artists? I mean, it's not like you're waiting until an artist is big. You're also discovering a lot of artists, because that's part of the Juxtapose ethos, not just wait and write up about those who are famous, but actually, so make your own choices. But how do you find artists these days?
I'm this is going to sound funny for somebody who runs a big Instagram account, but I'm bad at Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people who just flips through Instagram and looks for artists. Mm-hmm. I obviously go to a lot of art things. I talk to artists about the people that they like, and mm-hmm. trade stories about artists that they are following or that they are interested in, or, oh, hey, I was in a group show and I do most of my research peer to peer. And that way I can find new artists, even just that weren't mentioned to me, that way. I think that's still the best way is if you talk to somebody like Eddie Martinez, who's a very, accomplished contemporary painter, he's going to list off 10 young artists that he's been interested in who have either worked in his studio or works at his friend's studio. And then you start kind of doing your research that way. I do not like using Instagram only. I'm not great at it. I don't think I have the attention span for it, but I'm 100% peer to peer.
Yeah, I think it's the only way that kind of can work. I have a family, I have kids, we have a lot of stuff that's going on every day. I spend, it might look different, you know, to people because I, you know, sort of continuously post stuff, but I don't spend much time on Instagram in total. And I'm usually pointed by, I mean, sometimes, of course, you discover something, but it's mostly the personal relationships that you have to other artists or gallerists who say, oh, you have to look into this artist. You know, sort of that's also, I think it's a lot easier that way to get a little bit of understanding what's behind it, because it's not just the aesthetics, you know, it's a lot more
that
an artist has to bring to the table.
I think too, like when you've been doing something for, you know, for you since for almost, you know, 20 plus years, and for, you know, I've been doing it since for 14, like you get yourself in this routine of like, if you're going to shows, you're going to art fairs, you're flying around, you're going to places, like you start like, the things that you're really attracted to really start popping out really, really mm-hmm. quickly. And you know, you can go, I always shock myself. I'll go into Freeze, let's say, just mm-hmm. for one of those fairs, and I'll be like, oh, I don't know who that artist is. Like, oh, wow, I spend my whole life doing this. I've never heard of this artist.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go down that rabbit hole of researching, oh, okay, this is, so they've shown here, and they've had this career. Oh, okay, they went to this art school. Okay, you look up at that art school, and you're like, oh, this person went there too. You start building your sort of your exploration template or whatever of how mm-hmm. like you learn about artists. And I stick to that. I think one of the big things, right, is that the art fairs become like this, you know, in the last 10 years, like there's so many art fairs. But those weeks where you can go to a city where there's five or six art fairs and a bunch of art openings are so, they're so illuminating and finding really good people. Go, you know, if you go to the offbeat shows and you find like, you find such good stuff. So I'm a constant, and I like going by myself. I don't like going with people, you know, I'm not really good at going to art fairs with other people. Cause you know, I don't really want, I mean, occasionally I want a glass of champagne or something, but I just kind of want to like, dig my heels in for a couple hours and just, you know, do it. But yeah, I find the art life to be really, really fun if you let it be fun. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it's so serious because it's so much economics behind it. But if you just sort of take a step back and realize how fun it can be, I think that's also something as I develop, you know, stress on trying to put together a magazine and all the mm-hmm. content, I still try to make sure I tell myself that this is so much fun. I can't believe I get to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's I still see it. I mean, it's hard work. It's a lot of work. It's not very well compensated most of the times. But of course, I mean, it's a very special field that you're actually in. And when you, it's really funny. We're saying this on art fairs. I mean, I've done a lot of art fairs with the gallery, and I've been to many art fairs even before I opened the galleries. And I always enjoyed the art fair feeling. It has gotten really big and crowded, but I still like to go over an art fair by myself, because that also allows me to walk past things.
Because absolutely,
that's the one thing, I don't have the time. I don't want to stop everywhere. And if you go in a group, they say, "Oh, that's a beautiful painting," or "Look at this," and I'm just like, "I'm like, I can't," because it's this. It can get, you know, sort of like a little bit like pollution, you know, and it's, I mean, there's a couple of art fairs that actually bomb you with, I don't know, it's like a constant flash of things, and it's not necessarily good. I think that's, I've been to art fairs that were really good, and I've also been to art fairs that were really bad. So I can actually go over an art fair and have kind of a feeling where I stop. And the thing is that I've this experience over the recent years is that a lot of people actually go to art fairs and to exhibitions and don't necessarily look anymore what's on the walls. And I think it's always good. That's like a recommendation. And it's not necessarily their fault. It's not because they're ignorant or they don't want to. It's because it's so many options. And here you get your champagne and there's something, and then there's a band playing, and you know, it's something is everywhere. It's like a carnival. It's like a circus. So my recommendation always is like, you know, sort of when you go over this, you know, sort of your goal should be that afterwards you can say, what was the best work you've seen? Not what's the best on the fair, but what's the best work?
Yeah.
And do you remember the name? And then it's kind of a success for your person. I mean, we both go on art fairs probably with a different view, but it's that's something that you can actually achieve because art fairs can be very challenging.
Well, it's okay. So one of my favorite things to do at art fairs, and this is just so silly, but I just love the fact, I love going and seeing the disdain of a gallery assistant if they know you're not going to buy something. I get such a kick out of that because they're just so mean to you. Like, why are you wasting my time going into my booth? You know, I love that because it's just like, oh, who cares? I've been trying to figure this out recently, but I wonder how museums can capture that social energy that an art fair has. And I don't know why museums, a lot of museums don't have that ability to create like a social event every couple months where people show up and just drink and don't even care about the art. Cause it's weird how art fairs are able to do that, but museums struggle to get that sort of audience, but somehow an art fair comes into town and an art fair is really just it's for the ultra rich to buy stuff. I mean, it's not really for anybody else, but like a museum's should be for everybody. And I don't know why they can't get that social part of it down, but I really wish some museums do a good job, but I don't understand that schism of between art fair and museum that they just can't, museums have, they have wonderful people working there trying to get people to come in the doors. Like, well, we're really struggling. It's like, I don't know. So why is that art fair that has really bad art in it getting so many people to show up? Bad, but you know what I mean.
But it's okay to say bad art, so it's
fine. Yeah, it's fine.
There's bad art.
There's so much bad art. Oh. Yeah. There's bad art being sold to us as good art by people who have these academic degrees where they're trying to over-explain. If you have to over-explain it, I just want to feel it. I want to feel it in my heart. I want to feel it in my, in my gut when I see something really good. I don't need to be, I don't need a 25-page dissertation on, because, sometimes I just get really frustrated on that. And I actually think that's why Juxtapose does a nice job, is because we don't do the dissertation. We actually talk to the artist about like the stuff that kind of more the gut and the heart stuff. So that's, if we can keep doing that for another 25 years, I'll be so happy.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a good thing. If we're doing this for 25 years, it's also with Juxtapose, you have, I don't really know how to say this in English, but it's like the Juxtapose is strong enough to actually place artists and art in a context. And so yes, as a magazine, you will not show bad art and say this is bad art, but you don't need the 25-page dissertation to approve something and to give it, sort of place in this world. I think it's if somebody has been written about in Juxtapose, that is important also for the career of this person. And I think if you achieve that, then you have a lot of responsibility. And you don't take it easy and lighthearted. And if you keep that in mind, I mean, you can do this the next 25 years easily,
Yeah. And one of the things too, when I came in as managing editor in 2006, the editor in chief, Matt Ravelli, who also owned Upper Playground, he told me, he's like, look, and it's something very, very important for you to understand, as you go through your art career, that especially doing the magazine, like you might not like every piece of art that is in the magazine, but what you need to understand, what you need to get yourself to a point is, how can you talk about that in a way? How can you talk about that art in a way that's more about its place in history as opposed to if you like it or not? And that was a big turning point for me. Cause when I was 24, it was like, I either hate it or I love it. I was so black and white. And he really, really was great at teaching me at a young age that you'll be better at your job if you start finding ways to talk about art that maybe isn't your aesthetic, your aesthetically your favorite. I'm lucky now because as editor in chief, I kind of only get to interview the people that I really like because I get to assign myself those things. I like the idea of I'm not going to like everything, always, but I mm-hmm. like being able to read about it and understand where it's coming from and present it to people in a way of love and care, even if it's not the scene that I'm from. So I thought that that was always a good bit of advice that I've tried to use all these years.
Yeah, it's good advice.
Yeah.
All right, I've one last thing I want to,
ask
you. Getting back to the current situation, is there anything you would say you would recommend artists to these days? You know, like, I don't know, just, you know, sort of stay positive.
Well, I think it goes back to that artists can actually be teachers right now, and that I think they need to remember that not everybody that follows them or not everybody that is interested in them knows how to make art or knows, mm-hmm. you know, how to do things in the way that they do. And I think being teachers and really instructing people on how to be creative in a time that is demanding for it, I think is really important. And I hope it's the, you know, I think artists always reflect the times that we're in. So I think that's actually, if they're not feeling motivated to make work, maybe that's the fingerprint that they have on this time, is actually teaching people how to be creative and how to be isolated with creativity. I'm still kind of figuring out what the artwork is going to look like from this time, because an artist practice is so much, you know, done in isolation and by themselves, that I don't know if we're going to have, like, you know, COVID germs in the paintings or something, or like, you know, very specific, you know, I guess, you know, characteristics of the time. But I think this idea of where the magazine cover we're going to do for summer is kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod to social distancing, but not in a way that's so obvious that it will feel mm-hmm. like we're really pressing something. It's just the artist that we're working with is really great when it comes to that, kind of telling those stories. But I just think, like, artists need to understand that they're the ones that we're going to look to. I mean, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, I got really offended the other day about celebrities singing John Lennon's Imagine on Instagram. It made me want to just, like, I wanted to just run outside and scream. I hate stuff like that. I hate that. I hate when celebrities in their big mansions sit around and, like, sing some song that's magical, and then they ruin it for all of us forever. But artists, I actually think artists who create and make, I think this is a great, great time for them to get on podcasts, get do some Instagram live stuff and show, like, what you do. If you feel comfortable with it, do, you know, let people know, like, what, how we can, you know, get through this and be creative and not feeling kind of so stuck and, you know, alone. So that's kind of my advice, I guess, to artists now. And, you know, just it's gonna come back at some point, I hope. I don't know.
It will.
Yeah.
I agree to everything you just said. It's good. Evan, thanks for taking the time and doing this.
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, it's great. I never get interviewed.
Really?
I mean, you have so much to tell.
I mean, seriously. I mean,
well, I just feel like I end up being. I always have to interview people, so it's kind of nice to actually talk.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It reminds me of the things that I don't know. It's just nice. It's nice to be reminded.
I'm happy I could do this.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Great. Have a nice afternoon.
Yeah. Evening. Stay evening. Safe.
That's right. Yeah. You too.
Well, thank you for listening today. I will be back with more talks shortly. If you have any questions for me or my guests, I'm happy to hear them all. Just send me a mail to hello@heliumtalk.com or a direct message on my Instagram @heliumcowboy. Stay safe and healthy, and take good care of everyone around you.
Helium Talk.